Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
In this July 5th episode, we take a glimpse of the past into a movement in the USFL, a nostalgic moment in the Steel City, and a Hall of Fame hands fill our day. We cover these stories and so much more, including the birthdays of Hall of Famers, in just one moment. This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. This is your host, Darren Hayes, and we are podcasting from America's North Shore, bringing you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So in taking the snap from the sportshistorynetwork.com and handing off to pigskindispatch.com, let's go no huddle through today's football history headlines.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com, and welcome once again to the Pigpen, your place for the portal to positive football history. And we're glad to bring it once again to you for this July 5th episode. And we're going to start off with our newspapers.com football history headline of the day, and it comes from the July 5th, 1984 Clarion Ledger in Jackson, Mississippi, when they posted, "Fall may keep USFL from stumbling." The report was a story about how on Saturday, prior to the USFL's playoff game between the New Jersey Generals and the Philadelphia Stars, they had to be relocated from Philly's Veterans Stadium to the old Franklin Field, home of the Penn University, as the Philadelphia Phillies had a home game on the diamond of Veterans Stadium. The Generals owner, Donald Trump, an avid proponent of moving the USFL to a fall schedule, had this to say. "Sure, the Stars had a conflict of dates in Vet Stadium with the Phillies, and they tell me if we played in the fall, they would have had a similar conflict in September or October. But that's my point. If we played in the fall, we wouldn't have a baseball conflict later when it's our playoffs." The outspoken businessman went on to say, "Our attendance is up, but it's up despite the spring season, not because of it." This issue would soon be discussed at the USFL meetings in August as to whether the USFL would move to a fall schedule to challenge the NFL head-to-head or stay on that same spring schedule that had been right from its design. Trump was not on the fall bandwagon all by himself, though. The Birmingham Stallions owner, Marvin Warner, and J. William Oldenburg of the LA Express supported the change of schedules to a more traditional football season as well. David Dixon, the author of the USFL plan, clearly intended for the league to be a spring phenom, and the history tells us that he was probably right in thinking so. It is thought that the USFL will return after a 30-year hiatus in 2022 to a spring format. If you want to be able to read through some old articles like the Clarion Ledger, you need to check out newspapers.com. At newspapers.com, you get access to over 640 million pages worth of news from the U.S., Canada, England, Scotland, Ireland, and more, dating all the way back to 1798. Get a free one-week subscription to newspapers.com by visiting sportshistorynetwork.com/newspapers, and with a paid subscription, you'll also be helping to support the production of this and other Sports History Network shows. So for those free 7 days, it's sportshistorynetwork.com/newspapers. Get it today. Now, let's go to your Hall of Fame birthdays for this July 5th, and we'll start off in the year 1951. Omaha, Nebraska. Johnny Rogers, who was listed as the University of Nebraska's wingback from 1970 to 1972, was born. The footballfoundation.org says that in 3 years at wingback in Bob Devaney's offense at Nebraska, they won 3 Big 8 conference titles and were the national champions in 1970 and 71. Rogers was an all-conference 3 times, consensus All-American in 1971, and a unanimous All-American in 1972. After that magical 1972 season, Johnny took home the Heisman Trophy and was named the Player of the Year by ABC. In his career, he carried the ball 130 times and averaged 5.7 yards a try. He caught 143 passes and averaged a gain of 17.3 yards per catch. He had 133 kick returns and averaged 17.8 yards. And when the stats are combined into the category called all-purpose running, they show 406 plays with an average of 13.8 yards per play. That's a record. He had a jittery, swirling running style, and in 1971, Nebraska and Oklahoma met in a duel of teams ranked number one and number two. Oklahoma led 31-28 late in the game, and Rogers made a 72-yard punt return, according to the NFF's article, and Nebraska won 35-31. Johnny Rogers received the great honor of being selected for inclusion in a College Football Hall of Fame in the year 2000. And after graduation, Rogers played four seasons in the CFL with the Montreal Alouettes, and then a few more years with the NFL's San Diego Chargers. July 5th, 1956, Fort Ord, California. James Lofton, the Pro Football Hall of Fame wide receiver that played football for the Packers, the Raiders, Bills, Eagles, and Rams, was born that day. He hails from Stanford University, where he had a brilliant college career before becoming a pro. The ProFootballHOF.com website says that the Packers took him number 6 overall in the 1978 NFL Draft. James was a first-team All-Pro in 1981 with Green Bay, and he was selected to the Pro Bowl 8 times in his long NFL career. In his 16 seasons, James hauled in 764 receptions for 14,004 yards and 76 touchdowns. That career total of yardage, according to the Pro Football Hall of Fame, was an NFL best at the time of his retirement, while his 43 games with 100 or more yards receiving ranked third. He was eventually traded to the Raiders, but a few years later landed on the Bills roster. In 1991, at the age of 35, the still speedy receiver became the oldest player in league history to record 1,000 receiving yards in a season. That same year, he recorded a career-best 220 receiving yards in a single game against the Cincinnati Bengals. Now, those are some great Hall of Famers, but we have a little bit of an extra today. We're going to take a little bit of a glimpse at football history, not actually pertaining to July 5th, but it's sort of the months of July and August combined, and it's a good time to talk about them. Because in 1936, the Pittsburgh Steelers owner, Art Rooney, funded the payroll and operations of his team from winnings of a horse racing parlay he bet he made at Saratoga Racetrack in New York State. The reports vary in the amount he won on that half a week made of dreams, but an approximately $160,000 to over $330,000 estimated in winnings funded the team for almost 5 years. The Foolish Pleasure Valerie blogspot says that Rooney started his gambling streak at Yonkers Racetrack in 1936, and according to author Joseph Madden in his book Set Him Up, in 2 days at two tracks in New York, he made a killing that people talked about for years. Starting on an August Saturday afternoon in the Empire City track, which later would be called the Yonkers Harness Track, of which his sons purchased in 1972, by the way, and ended in upstate on Monday at Saratoga. Rooney's first bet was $8,000 on an 8-1 long shot, Quel Ju, who won in a photo finish. And it was the first of five long shots he picked and won among his 7 winning tickets. It was estimated in some writings that Art Rooney Sr. then cleared over $256,000 that day in Saratoga, of which AJR later claimed was much, much more than that. Whatever the amount was, it helped fund the Pirates football team for a few years until they changed their names to the Steelers in 1940. Remember, Art Rooney founded the Pirates, which we're going to talk about on July 8th, in 1933, Pittsburgh Pirates. In 1940, they changed their name to Steelers. It would take almost another 35 years, but then Art Rooney, the chief, would see that gamble pay off with the first of 4 NFL titles in 6 years. And for more of the stats on the people of football, pro football born on July 5th, check out profootballreference.com. We have a link to it on our website, pigskindispatch.com, for that July 5th. Make sure you take a look at that. And, what a great day of history. And if we missed anything, we want you to tell us. You can reach us at pigskindispatch@gmail.com. Let us know of anything more for July 5th in the world of football at any level in any league around the world. We want to know about it because we want to make sure we post it and have it on this daily podcast. We want to be the most accurate portal to football history that there can be. Also, you can see us on sportshistorynetwork.com. It is the headquarters of Sports Yesteryear, and it's getting bigger and bigger every day. We have more and more podcasts and authors and blog posts providers coming on every day to talk about sports history, and it is truly becoming such a special thing. We hope you check it out, sportshistorynetwork.com, and you can check out our home website, pigskindispatch.com, your portal for positive football history. And like I said, we want to have everything included that we can in football history at all levels. Just want to have a one-stop shopping for all your gridiron needs in history. We want to thank you once again for joining us here today and each and every day. We hope you'll join us tomorrow and the day after that. And tell your friends and neighbors about us, too. We are at pigskindispatch.com, your favorite podcast provider, or at sportshistorynetwork.com. And you can find us on Twitter, at Pigskin Dispatch. Facebook, we have a Pigskin Dispatch page, and we always go on the R Sports Reddit subreddit as Pigskin Dispatch. We post there almost every day. LinkedIn under Darren Hayes, Facebook under Darren Hayes, or that great Pigskin Dispatch page. So until tomorrow, everybody, we hope to see you once again, and we thank you. Have a great gridiron day.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts, is found right here on the Sports History Network.